Good morning, Montreal. You are tuned to the Wednesday Morning After on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We have a full show lined up for you today with two pre-recorded interviews and a Rabble podcast. The first interview is with radio host and graduate musician Nick Schofield. Nick is going to speak to us about the release of his latest album, Glass Gallery. The Rabble podcast is about taxing the rich in Canada, and it comes from Radio Labour's Marc Bélanger. Finally, we'll speak with Alicia Clara, extraordinary musician, with a style that hails from the smoky nightclubs of twanger music. 8 a.m. brings Democracy Now!, 8:15 brings weather, and we'll wrap up the show. Let's start the day off with some music.
I got the top down in this Mustang 65. You got that James Dean kind of voice I like. I do not do this often, just all the time. I think that you and I should get away for the night. Under the moonlight, baby, I can be your type of guy. 0 to 100 miles in 3.5. Pull the shade down, down on top of your big blue eyes. Damn right, babe. I'm just a Cali boy with a prairie girl tonight. It's kinda hard to believe it. She's just my vibe. I got no room for growth, but baby, that's alright. Sometimes you just need some loving to survive. Under the moonlight, baby, I can be that type of guy. 0 to 100 miles. Stays down, down on top of those big blue eyes. They're bright, babe, under the moonlight. Under the moonlight. Under the moonlight. You're right, it's bright. James Dean kind of voice I like.
How to say hello without a Why you all on my ass, all on me? Why you all on my ass, all on me? Why you all on my ass, all on me? Why you all on my ass, all on me? Why you wanna own it, own it, own it, own it, own it, own it, own it? Must be 'cause I'm on it, own it, own it, own it, own it, own it, own it. Why you all on my ass? I'm trying to get this paper right now. I'm feeling like I'm higher than a skyscraper, trying to get myself to the level that we need. Why you trying to hold us back? Let's proceed.
Hater.
Don't never try to stop a real, real G. Too many haters and I'm on a tree. Don't take bad mind, stay far from me. Can't hold a vibe with your dark energy. Don't know, say my name, Serenity. So me do it with ease like a nice summer breeze. Fresh and ting, this is clean. Walking trophy, you're a hood celebrity. I just pace and ball. Tell them what it is when I stack it all. Like the way I do it, 'cause I chase the cows. Chase the cows. Pause. Why you all on my ass all on it? Why you all on my ass all on it? Why you all on my ass all on it? Why you all on my ass all on it? Why you wanna own it? Own it, own it, own it, own it, own it, own it. Must be 'cause I'm on it, own it, own it, own it. Chaos, crab in a bucket, grade A, organic piece, a different type of cutlet. You can't stop me, made from a different fabric. 514 is when someone wreaked this havoc. Yo, I guess I'm on them treetops, but I'm never green. I just oversee how the haters feel when I'm overseas. South Beach, Nassau, Negril, them vets cause me do it for real. Don't ever let no one stop your shine. No shade blind them with all your light. They will try to hold you back a dirty blight. But like MJB said, this my life, so I just pace and bow. Tell them what it is when I stack it out. Like the way I do it, cause I chase the cows. Chase the cows. Pause. Why you all on my ass all lonely? Why you all on my ass all lonely?
Get off my ass.
Why you all on my ass all lonely?
Y'all need to get off my ass.
Why you all on my ass all lonely? Why you wanna own it? Own it. Own it. Own it. Own it. Own it. Own it. Must be cause I'm on it. Own it. Own it. Own it.
Nick Schofield is releasing a brand new LP called Glass Gallery. It promises to bring you to a new place in music. With us today, we have Nick Schofield. Hi, Nick, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be a musician.
Right. My name is Nick. I am a Montreal-based musician, producer, and radio host. And I first started playing music when I was 9 years old. I began as a drummer, started studying electroacoustics at Concordia University, and that kind of changed the path of my music career. I got really into analog synthesizers and composing experimental music. From there, I formed a group called Saxon Drum, another group called Rev Sonore and Best Fern. And I started making solo music in 2018 and released Water Sign. And just in February of 2021, I released my second solo album, Glass Gallery.
What is the process you went through producing Glass Gallery?
Glass Gallery was created in March 2018 in Ottawa, where I was raised. I was visiting the National Gallery of Canada on a weekly basis, really soaking in as much inspiration as I could from the architecture and artwork. Every time I would leave the gallery, I would channel this inspiration into making new demos. And I was creating multiple demos a day at this time using a vintage synthesizer called the Prophet 600.
Let's look at some of the songs from the album. One of your songs is named Mirror Image. What is the story behind this song?
I was drawing influence from an artist named Lori Spiegel, her song called Patchwork from the album The Expanding Universe. This was kind of a template of the type of music that I wanted to create on Glass Gallery. It has a very vintage analog tone, very raw synthesis with bouncing arpeggiations and a lot of playfulness in the musicality. So Spiegel, Lori Spiegel, Spiegel means mirror in German. And this is my little nod to Lori Spiegel as mirror image.
May we hear some of your music?
Absolutely. Let's check it out.
This is Mirror Image on the Wednesday Morning After.
Thank you.
How are you planning to celebrate this release?
It's already been such a fun experience sharing this music, even though there isn't the usual album launch in person or getting to see the album in a record store. I've received an outpouring of support from friends and new fans, and I've got some plans in the making for presenting a live stream concert in a couple of different avenues, which I'm looking forward to doing.
In your opinion, where does music reach society?
Well, that's a good question, because I think that visiting the National Gallery from an early age actually instilled in me the importance of art and creativity in society. The fact that the most beautiful building I have ever stepped foot in is really a sanctuary of artistic creativity, it left a strong impression on me, and I really wanted my music to be the equivalent of these paintings, these sculptures that were housed in a beautiful space like the National Gallery. So places like museums and art galleries give me hope, because it shows to me that society does actually value artwork, and that it is a source of hope and inspiration for all of us.
May we listen to some more of your music?
Yes, gladly. This is Ambient Architect on CKUT.
If our listeners want to get some free listening time or to buy your music, where should they go?
I am a big proponent of Bandcamp as a music streaming and purchasing platform. So if you visit nickschofield.bandcamp.com, you can listen to my music there and you can buy it digitally or on CD or vinyl if that's what you're into.
Thank you for your interview today.
Thank you for having me on the program.
You've been listening to Nick Schofield speaking about music. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
This is Solidarity News on Radio Labor.
This is a Radio Labor Canada report recorded on Friday, February 19th, 2021. I'm Mark Belanger. In the report this week, the campaign to tax the rich, how Canada's blocking cheaper COVID vaccines for the global south, the Labor Start report about union events and singing.
It's our union that defends our rights. Our union's as strong as our will is to fight. For the union is you and the union is me. So stand up and stand by our union.
This is Radio Labor.
What kind of place do all of us want to live in? Whether you're wealthy or not, what kind of country do we want to live in together?
That is Katrina Miller. Ms. Miller is the program director of the Broadbent Institute. The Institute is Canada's leading source of research and advocacy for social democracy. It defines social democracy as an array of social movements promoting equality and recognition of differences, including feminism, anti-racism, the environmental movement, and struggles for the recognition of disability rights and Indigenous rights. It has partnered with unions such as CUPE and the Steelworkers to organize a campaign called Tax the Rich. I asked Ms. Miller if Canada has the same wealth inequality problem that we hear so much about in the United States.
Yeah, Canada's top 1% definitely has the concentration of wealth in Canada. It owns about 25% of all the wealth in Canada. So Canada sees, just like the U.S. and many other places around the world, a concentration of wealth that's sort of taken out of the economy and held amongst an elite few.
How have the wealthy in Canada fared during the pandemic?
Well, it's interesting because I think at the outset of the pandemic, there was a narrative that the pandemic would be the great equalizer in some way, that it would hit everyone equally, that the markets were failing, so people who held wealth would lose some of their wealth, that everyone was kind of in the same boat. However, what we found now a year into the pandemic, that actually has not been the case. The opposite has been true. The inequality that we started the pandemic with has actually increased, particularly around wealth. The amount of wealth, for example, of the top 20 billionaires in Canada has actually grown by $37 billion during the pandemic. We look at the large corporations, a set of large Canadian corporations in Canada. They've made very healthy profits this year. And in fact, many of them have made record profit levels. And we can even see that those of us who are fortunate and privileged enough to have some wealth in our assets, either in property we own or other assets such as stocks, that in the end, at the end of the year, for the most part, many of us have seen increases in those assets. So overall, during the pandemic, the wealthy has fared quite well.
The Broadbent Institute has proposed three ways the government could fund a just pandemic recovery. What are they?
Well, in a sense, there's actually four ways. The first way is that we should be using deficit spending to ensure that we have a robust response that takes care of people during the pandemic and gets us through the first stage recovery that provides government the ability to make quick investments in smart things to get people back to work, to ensure that we're supporting the parts of the economy where our future lies, like the caring economy and a green and clean economy, and make sure that there are just jobs on those basis. But if we want to actually maintain and continue to grow a good, just society, we need to have long-term ways of financing that. And for that, we think that we need a fair and just tax system, one that asks those of us, well, actually doesn't ask, expects those of us who have been able to reap wealth over the last few decades to contribute more. So we have three particular tax measures that we talk about. One, the first and foremost, and the one that probably got the greatest demand around it, is to close the loopholes that have allowed people to hoard their wealth. So, for example, if you are fortunate enough to be able to own a bunch of property and regularly sell property and then buy more property, the profit you make on that sale is only taxed at 50% right now, which doesn't make any sense because it's income like any other income. Loopholes like that, there's other loopholes that are the same for stock options. For example, if you make money off of stock options, you also get taxed at a lesser rate than if you earn a wage working at the grocery store. Those sorts of tax loopholes, including tax havens and the use of offshoring of your money, should be closed. And if we closed those, we would have probably 20 to 30 billion more every year in the government revenues to fund things like healthcare, like pharmacare, like access to education. So closing loopholes is first and foremost. Secondly, we need a wealth tax. We need to tax the ultra rich on their wealth, not just their income, on what they're holding for themselves in their stock options, in their properties, in their bank accounts, so that that can be part of what helps us recover as a society and provides for our collective good. The third thing is those corporations who've been able to profit well and above their current profit margins during the pandemic need to give some of that money back to help fund our recovery and our continued economic resiliency.
Rich countries like Canada are blocking an initiative to supply COVID-19 vaccines for people in the global south. C. Marie Ainsborough has a report.
Trade unions and civil society groups have accused Canada, the United States, and other rich countries such as the UK of blocking a way of getting more COVID-19 vaccines to those who need them in the global south. Ahead of critical talks at the World Trade Organization, the unions are calling for the rich countries to stop blocking a proposal which would waive certain intellectual property rights on vaccines and other medical products. Public Services International has prepared a video in support of the campaign. PSI is the global union federation which represents public service unions around the world.
We health workers have been giving it our all to keep you safe. Thousands of us have paid with our lives. That's why we are so angry that some people are making our job even harder.
And this time, we're not talking about the lockdown breakers or the anti-vaxxers. We're talking about a few government leaders who are blocking vaccines from being made for all those who need them.
We all celebrated when we heard that government funding had helped produce a number of effective vaccines.
But the bad news is that some of the world's biggest corporations are now using patents to monopolize profits and prevent the global scaling up of production. This has already led to deadly delays in the vaccination programs, which we are relying on to reduce pressure on us and our hospitals and finally end these lockdowns.
The crazy part is the rules already allow for medical patents to be waived in exceptional circumstances.
And if this global health emergency isn't exceptional, what is? A waiver would mean vaccines and supplies can be produced cheaply and at huge scale, making them accessible for us to deliver to our communities quickly and across the world.
But the World Trade Organization must give the okay.
A World Trade Organization waiver on COVID-19 cures is not some radical idea. The World Health Organization supports it, health workers unions support it, Medicine Sans Frontières supports it. And so do plenty of governments, including Bolivia, India, South Africa, Kenya, and many more.
Let's be clear, opposition to this waiver will lead to the needless deaths of hundreds of thousands of people.
If you clap for us, great. But now we need your help.
Tell your leaders you want the interests of your nurses, your doctors, and your family to come ahead of monopolized profits.
Tell them to give the World Trade Organization waiver a green light so we can get the vaccines out to all of you as soon as possible.
Here with his report about union events is Labor Start correspondent Derek Blackadder.
Some of the big stories on our Canadian news pages this week included a win for Unite Here members at a remote liquid natural gas construction site in BC, where cleaning staff won a 40% wage increase in their first contract. We also covered the fight facing locked out steelworkers in Ontario and the Nova Scotia Fed-led fight for paid sick days. When scanning our Canadian news pages in both languages, two themes popped out this week. The collapse of the airline industry and appeals from unions like the Air Canada Pilots Association, QP Unifor, and the Machinists for it to receive assistance similar to what has been extended to other sectors, and concerns about the potential for an explosion of the virus in the education systems of most provinces. Canadian labor history items on our site for this week included the 1949 start of the asbestos strike that transformed Quebec society, the sinking of the Ocean Ranger oil platform in 1982 that killed 84 workers, and the game-changing PC-1003 that in 1944 responded to worker militancy by forcing employers to recognize and bargain with trade unions. Amongst the Canadian stories on our Working Women page this week were QP's fight for realistic wages for LPNs in New Brunswick, the Move Up petition that may push the feds into legalizing sex work, and an organizing victory for Unite Here at a Vancouver hotel despite the pandemic and the employer's anti-union campaign. CanCon on our Global Health and Safety Newswire included coverage of the Red Deer slaughterhouse crisis and the news that teachers in the Northwest Territories will soon be getting the jab. UFCW's success in getting the Red Deer facility closed has to be applauded. The union managed this in the face of government indifference and an employer that put production and profit well ahead of the safety of 1,800 workers, many of them new Canadians or migrant workers. Globally, the big stories we covered included, of course, the fight to overthrow the military dictatorship in Myanmar, where the emerging leadership includes a significant number of trade unionists. At the same time, the labor movement in Belarus, which also faces a dictatorship, was the target of a new round of attacks, with leaders of several unions being disappeared by masked men believed to be paramilitary police officers. And we are watching the Amazon warehouse organizing campaign in the United States. The most recent story we carried on this fight was about how local government is cooperating with Amazon by timing streetlights near the warehouse so as to discourage workers from voting. Current campaigns that we are running at the request of unions around the world include an urgent appeal for online solidarity with the unions fighting 6,300 layoffs by FedEx in Europe. Look for details of this and other campaigns on our site. This is Derek Blackadder from Labor Start, reporting for Radio Labor.
Now here are Peter Hicks and the Grassroots Union Choir of Tasmania singing If It Weren't for the Union.
Our union story is there to be seen. Won many victories, we've suffered. As I turn through the pages and look back through time, there's one single question stands out in my mind. Today we may prosper, today we live free, but if it weren't for the union, where would we be? It's our union that defends our rights. Our union's as strong as our will is to fight. For the union is you and the union is me. So stand up and stand by our union. From its humble beginnings, our union has grown. So no working person needs struggle alone. But no gain that's been made has been made without cost. Together we'll see that no gain's ever lost. Take a look at those countries where workers are free. If it weren't for the union, where would we be? It's our union that defends our rights. But our union's as strong as our will is to fight. For the union is you and the union is me. So stand up and stand by our union.
If It Weren't for the Union was written by Jeff Francis and Peter Hicks. And that's it, labor news you can use. You can find our international features and daily newscasts at radiolabor.net. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about solidarity.
Eternally confused and intrigued by the human mind, Alicia Clara questions her peers' everyday lives through songwriting. Her unusual velvety vocals add an essential, undeniable, dreamy, almost ghostly quality to her music, blending together dream pop, indie rock, shoegaze, and even funk. With us today, we have Alicia Clara. Hi, Alicia, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. It's nice to be on the show.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be involved in your current musical project.
So, my name is Alicia, and I was born and raised in Geneva, in Switzerland, but my mom is actually from Quebec. I don't really know exactly how I got involved in my project, but I've always wanted to release music. I just didn't really think it was possible for me for the longest time, because that's not really considered as a career where I grew up, more so a hobby. So I studied journalism and photography in university, but I wasn't that passionate about it. And about 2 years ago, I was doing internships in New York, and I didn't really know what to do next because my visa was ending and I didn't know where to go, what to do. And I just figured that I should try and get into music. But I was trying to find a place where to do that, a place that would be affordable and a place that I could actually stay in without needing a visa, like New York. And I thought of Montreal because I'd always actually wanted to spend some time here and be close to my maternal family. So yeah, I just kind of took off, came here and started talking to people. And I started working with Dylan O'Brant of Sorry Girls on production for my first single, Closing Time at the Gates, which came out a year ago. And then from there on out, he introduced me to Sarah of Hot Tramp, whom I started working with, and then to Michael Kalman, who's my producer, and who in turn introduced me to the band that I'm working with right now. He's also in the band. So here I am.
So you're releasing your latest EP, Outsider Unusual, on the 19th. What was the concept for this album?
I would say that the general concept is kind of a late coming of age. So it's like me in my mid-20s trying to figure out who I am, kind of thinking I got it, like I got the answer, but then realizing that I don't. And so it's just a realization that I'm never going to be done learning about myself. At various stages of my life, I'm always going to learn more about myself. Sounds a little ridiculous when saying it out loud, but yeah, I guess it's just like me kind of talking to myself during my quarter life crisis, if that makes any sense.
The song Haze Maze is interesting. What is the story behind this song?
So it's a song about obsessing over wanting to make someone change for me, but failing because I don't believe that you can make people change for you. Like, I do believe that people change. I just don't think someone external can make that happen. It's like me making that mistake time and time again, and just like ultimately admitting that when I'm doing that, I'm just being really selfish and self-centered and acknowledging that it's stupid. So like the lyrics are kind of dark in a way, but I didn't want this song to be too dark, which is why the production's kind of like light and summery. So yeah, it's just like a little self-deprecation. I was like inspired by the summer because I wrote the first verse when I was walking home from work last summer. And I was like thinking about, you know, like having drinks in the park with my friends, my crush, blah, blah, blah. And so that's how it kind of came to be.
May we hear some of your music?
Yeah, for sure.
This is Haze Maze on the Wednesday Morning After.
Thank you.
do you plan to celebrate the release of Outsider Unusual?
To be honest, it's going to be a little sad because it's coming out tomorrow. So with the curfew, well, my manager Sarah is going to pop by in the afternoon with Prosecco. So we're going to like day drink, I guess, to celebrate. After 7:30 p.m., she's going to have to leave. So it's just going to be me in my apartment. But there is a stream show from The Diving Bell, which I'm going to be watching, and I'm going to be answering questions as well. And then I don't know, I'll see how I can kind of keep the party going after this. But yeah, the reality is with COVID, it's going to be a little sad probably.
What was the introspective process you went through when you recorded Stones Like Eyes?
So I actually wrote that song and made a demo for it about a year and a half ago, long before I started working with my band and my current producer, Michael Kelman. I'm not exactly sure what went through my mind, but I would say it's about like having this subconscious part of me that kind of expects things to naturally unfold into a happy ending. But as I grow older, I realize that that's not true. So I guess it's like about being naive and yeah, just like kind of talking, like the chorus is me being naive and the verses is me being like, yo, you're just like a piece of dust in the universe. So yeah, and then we actually, when we played the song as a full band, I wasn't really satisfied with where it was going and I kind of struggled to find a vision for new arrangements. So I almost took it off the EP, which is kind of crazy because it's the single that's doing the best right now. But one night my producer, Michael, came up with the slap bass riff and the drums and just like this kind of loop. And I was like, well, this is it. And it kind of like flowed naturally from there.
May we hear some more of your music?
Yeah, for sure.
This is Stones Like Eyes on CKUT.
Like a mighty calm, we were meant to stay.
If our listeners want some free listening time or to buy your music, where should they go?
They can find my music on my Bandcamp, which is aliciaclara.bandcamp.com, or any digital streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, or it would be free on YouTube to watch as well. So,
well, thank you for your interview today.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Alicia Clara speaking about her latest album, Outsider Unusual. I'm your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Early in the morning, before the sun rose, when the first bird sang, even while everyone was still asleep.
Morning. On that morning.
When the sun comes out.
This morning, baby.
Cock-a-doodle-doo. I hear the rooster crowing.
Now you must wake up.
Every morning when I wake up,
I woke up this morning with
the kiss of the morning.
Got up 7:30 every morning. Had the same breakfast.
Réveillez-moi à 8 heures demain matin.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. Riding a bike made of bacon and eggs.
In the morning.
In the morning.
In the
why should the sun replace the moonlight?
Has this ever happened to any of you, or will it happen to any of you, on the morning after the night before?
You are listening to The Morning After on CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial.
CKUT Radio.
Radio.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
Ever, the simplest gestures are our best protection to fight the virus. That's why we need to continue following basic health measures, such as keeping a 2-meter distance from others, wearing a mask and washing our hands regularly. Avoid travel and non-essential trips. And if you develop symptoms, be sure to get tested promptly and follow self-isolation guidelines. See all of the measures in place at quebec.ca/coronavirus. Let's continue to protect ourselves. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Suoni per il Popolo and Innovation en Concert present a night of great African-American composers. Montreal-based Les Angles Mortes is an ensemble directed by Julie Richard that revives marginalized classical compositions by African-American women. They will perform Julia Perry's Stabat Matera, a piece originally created in 1947. Toronto-based cellist Amal Arulanandam performs Julius Eastman's piece, The Holy Presence of Joan d'Arc. In this pre-recorded piece, he plays all 10 cello parts. Experience it free on Suoni TV at suoniperilpopolo.org, Thursday, April 1st at 8 p.m.
CKUT 90.3 FM, Montreal.
You're listening to Fallen Angels.